It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to Fade the Chalk, brought to you by the FTN Network. I am your host, Ebro, and with me, as always, is Adam Pfeiffer. And look, this week, we're going to talk about the same things we always do, people. It is waiver wire time, the pickups you need to be making to get on your rosters before Week 13. Adam, what's going on, man? How did Week 12 treat you? How are you doing?
Yeah, Week 12 was pretty good. Again, hopefully everybody had a great holiday. Not going to lie, We getting this waiver episode out a little bit later than usual because I'm not gonna lie, I fell asleep last night during the Seattle game. I'm gonna be perfectly honest. I had no intentions and enjoyment in watching the Seahawks punt and punt and punt some more. But week 12 though was pretty bad in terms of injuries. We'll talk about some of the injuries obviously in this episode for waivers, but yeah, I mean, McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, Debo Samuel, like Darren Waller, like it, DeAndre Swift. It was brutal for injuries in week number 12.
It really was, man. And yeah, we're going to roll through a lot of different players on this episode, diving into some of those injuries, players that look like they might be picked up in your league. And again, take that with a grain of salt, because some of these roster percentages, and we're going to talk about a few players that, like, they're low across the industry, whether you're looking at ESPN, you're looking at Yahoo and stuff like that. At this point in the season, there are dead leagues out there where people are just not monitoring it, not caring it anymore at this point. I hope that's not your league, and I hope that's not you, because if you're still in the thick of it, man, there's still a lot of football left, a lot of stuff to dive through the rest of the season. Before we kind of get through all of these pickups, if you have not done so already, head over to FTN Daily and get signed up for the Lineup Optimizer package right now. The Lineup Edge Optimizer has been crushing, man, multiple sports. You can get this action starting at $49 a month, all four sports, the optimizers, player, roster percentage, projections, one low price to start building your bankroll. Use the code FTNTV to get 15% off of every single month. So not your standard promo code where it's use it and you burn it. This is 15% off of every month. The code FTNTV, as well as, man, like, look, I'm posting my picks on a weekly basis on Mondays, on Thursdays, on Sundays. Head-to-head action. Like, if you want to sit here and talk shit to me on social media and you want to actually come try to, like, face me down on head-to-heads and take my money, head over to Top Prop Fantasy right now. You can meet me in the battleground, and this is literally the easiest way to play daily fantasy. You pick a player, and all you're going to say is, I think this player scores more fantasy points than the player you picked, and that's it. So you're not looking at other DFS platforms where you're like, okay, there's thousands of people, there's sharks in the lobbies and stuff like that. You're playing one-on-one, head-to-head against people. So head over there today. Again, I posted two different picks for the Monday night action. I'll be back on Thursday and Sunday posting my head-to-heads in the lobby. TopPropFantasy.com. You get the risk-free contest. So if you're not following them on Twitter, you need to be taking advantage of that right now. Adam, kick us off here, man. We got a laundry list of names here, about 8 to 10 players we're going to roll through. Why don't you start us with the injury guys, people we need to be monitoring if they're available? Because I know we're going to talk about Alexander Mattison, and people are like, there's no way in hell he's available in my league. But again, he could be out there. I mean, the crunch is real for bye weeks and stuff, and somebody could have dropped him. If you did, I mean, you're crazy if you have Dalvin Cook, one. But two, give me some names here, and give me your thoughts on Mattison. Like, is he just a locked-in, like, top 10, top 12 running back as long as Cook is out?
Yeah, we got, I think it was during halftime of Monday night's game where I think Schefter reported that Dalvin Cook's going to miss at least the next 2 weeks, and they're hoping to have him back after that. So, yeah, I mean, let's just preface this. If somehow Alexander Mattison is available in your league, just make sure that changes. But you look at, he's played 4 games with Dalvin Cook out of the lineup over the last 2 years. He's averaging 20.2 carries and 4.2 receptions per game, so nearly 25 touches per game. Faces Lions this week, who he obliterated earlier in the season. Maybe they give some more work to somebody else to where he doesn't get 25 touches, but he's still a lock for 20 plus, and we know he's talented. So yeah, you're starting him as a top, probably even higher than top 12, probably like top 7 or 8 until Dalvin Cook's back. Jamal Williams, not quite on the Alexander Mattison level, but DeAndre Swift suffered a shoulder injury on Thanksgiving. They're saying it's going to be tough, looks like, for him to play this week. Jamal Williams going to get all the work, all the pass. Like, Jamal Williams is going to get what DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams were getting combined, pretty much, which is 20 touches, potentially, you know, 7-8 catches a game. Minnesota's run defense has not been good this season. They play them in week number, obviously, they play each other this week. And he's 41% rostered on Yahoo. So like he's, depending on the league, he's like way widely more available than Madison. And he can, we've seen him when he gets opportunities, he can be a low end RB1. Now, granted, that was in the Packers offense. So I would temper expectations a little bit more with the Lions, but with them having no receivers to speak of, you know, he's going to get 20 touches. So make sure he's not available. Same with Chuba Hubbard, although we're not as excited about Chuba Hubbard as we were earlier in the season when McCaffrey first went down on that Thursday night game. We'll talk about why, I would imagine, in a little bit. So those three definitely stand out with the injuries to the running backs we saw in week 12.
Yeah, and let's kick us off then, man. I mean, I agree with all your points on Williams, on Madison. Williams is going to be a top 20 back, at least top 15, you really should say, based off the workload that he's going to get. I know the Lions are a gross offense, but it doesn't really matter. He's going to get the high-value touches inside the 20 and the check downs. We know Goff is going to check the ball down. So I think that I'm not saying it's plug and play and you look at him as a one-for-one with DeAndre Swift, but we've talked about this in multiple episodes. We talked about this in the offseason, Adam. Like, Jamal Williams is no slouch. He's not a slug. He's not as bad as everybody wants to make him out to be. I think that he is going to perform well as the lead back, and he's going to be a top 15 running back for as long as Swift can't play. So whether that's 1 week or 2 weeks, I mean, you're looking at a plug-and-play top 20 running back. But over to Carolina, you mentioned about not being that excited about Chuba Hubbard. I see Ameer Abdullah's name on the list. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, so I'm not saying like Chuba Hubbard won't be a viable like flex or RB2. We know he's going to be the early downs running back, but when Chuba Hubbard was the starting running back for Carolina earlier in the season, there was the one game against Dallas where he wasn't involved in the passing game at all because Rodney Smith was. Then Rodney Smith was, you know, to the practice squad, wasn't active for games. And we started to see Chuba Hubbard's passing game work go up. And then starting in week 8, Ameer Abdullah joined the team. Remember, he started the season on Minnesota. Joins the team in week 8, and from then on, the passing game work went down for Chuba Hubbard. And we've seen Ameer Abdullah play more and more each week over the last, you know, 3 or 4 games. So Ameer Abdullah, the matchups aren't great for Carolina to run the football. They have a bye this week, but then yeah, they have a game against Buffalo and Tampa where they could easily be behind, and that's more Ameer Abdullah. So I think he is somebody that you need to be looking to add. And again, a lot of the consensus might be, okay, Chuba Hubbard back to getting 25 touches, and Carolina is going to want to run the football. That was their MO with or without McCaffrey this year. But there's going to be a lot of situations where they're going to be trailing in games. I mean, it's not even just with McCaffrey out, but their defense is depleted with injuries right now. They just lost Dante Jackson to IR. So it's like they don't have a lot of guys left on defense. They're going to be behind in a lot of these games to end the season. That's going to bode well for Ameer Abdullah, who's really cut into Chuba Hubbard's passing down role since he joined the team back in week 8. So I wouldn't say he's the top player to add off waivers this week, but he's up there. And I think given all the other injuries to other running backs as well, and the fact that Chuba Hubbard is still, you know, viewed as the 1A or the 1, Abdullah is a sneaky add for the rest of the season.
I like that call. And I like the fact that, like, if you're at a point where you spent all the fab on Eli Mitchell, you blew the clip on other players already to this point, and you're staring either, hey,
by the way, congratulations if you did that on Eli Mitchell, because
yep.
Yeah, I remember I went on Justin Boone's podcast and we went through some like bold predictions for the rest of the season, and mine was that Elijah Mitchell would be a top 10 running back, and I mean, that looks to be the case. He looks amazing.
He's doing well, man. And I mean, Shanahan's told us at every single stop that he's going to give him the work. He continues to give him the work. Finger be damned, doesn't matter. But the whole point is that if you're sitting there with no fab right now, you blew the clip, you have none, you have like maybe pennies left in the bank, and you're shaking the piggy bank and you're like, how am I possibly going to get Jamal Williams, Alexander Mattison? If they are out there, you're probably not. But you can go spend either nothing or a dollar and go get Amir Abdullah on the cheap. And look, here's the thing. Chuba Hubbard has not been exceptionally elusive or effective with a lot of the volume that they were even giving him. So I think one from the hilt, Abdullah can eat into Hubbard's pass game role. And if for a team that you're talking about could be trailing a lot, he could actually have the role that we really should care about. And number two, if Hubbard continues to not really wow with the volume that he's been given, I'm not going to rule out the fact that maybe Amir Abdullah takes this job down the stretch. That can't be ruled out here because, I mean, for all of the yesteryear flame out and bust and whatever, I think we're past all of that considering that's been so long ago. But I think Amir Abdullah, whenever he's been given opportunities in the NFL over the last few seasons, the guy hasn't looked like a schmo. Like, he's looked and played well, man.
I just remember his rookie year in the preseason against the Jets. He had this, like, breakout run, and I literally think it single-handedly bumped his ADP up, and he was obviously very exciting out of college. It was interesting, too. I remember watching the All or Nothing on the Cardinals, and they went behind, like, the scenes of the draft room during that draft, and the Cardinals were like, yes, we're about to get Amir Abdullah. This is our guy, and the Lions took him, and they were like, all right, and they went and took David Johnson that year, who was obviously amazing. But, yeah, I mean, like, he was taking Alexander Mattison off the field, you know, in third down situations in Minnesota, and Chuba Hubbard is not as good as Alexander Mattison, in my opinion. So, yeah, I mean, he's clearly going to carve out a role, and outside of DJ Moore, they're not really throwing anybody else. I mean, Robbie Anderson's getting a handful of targets each week, but that's really it. So Chuba Hubbard will get the early down work and the goal line work probably, but you're going to see Amir Abdullah get the third down and passing work, and if the two-minute drill work, and then, like you said, if he outperforms Chuba Hubbard, who maybe this is, you know, 15 touches for, you know, 15 carries or whatever from Hubbard, and, you know, Abdullah gets like 8 carries and a couple catches a game.
Yeah, I mean, so I think go get Amir Abdullah. A guy I'm going to mention here, and he's probably already picked up. If not, he will be after this week. Dontrell Hilliard, I mean, I think that he's a viable pickup, although with Jeremy McNichols maybe back this week, I think that it's a trap in the sense that, like, I would not be spending a ton to get him if you do have the fab left. So we'd be prioritizing any one of these other running backs we've already mentioned over Hilliard, who's obviously still going to get work to at least some extent, but I think McNichols is going to cancel him out. Like, he could just go right back to the bench. And Foreman carried more of the work in this last week outside of the long run than Hilliard had. But moving over to some of these wide receivers, I want to get in here, and I'm going to start this with Marquez Valdes-Scantling. We have mentioned him on this podcast, not even just this season, last season, and people just don't like this guy. Like, they're like, oh God, he's too boom or bust. And I'm like, you basically just described the wide receiver position in fantasy. Unless you're talking about Cooper Kupp or Davante Adams or somebody up there at the top, that is legit the wide receiver position in fantasy. It's all boom or bust. But with Marquez Valdes-Scantling, I love his end-of-season schedule. The fact that he has gotten over the last two games, he's gotten almost an 18% target share. And we know the role that he plays for Green Bay. He's the deep threat. He is the deep threat. And if you look at the rest of the season schedule, it is mouth-watering, Adam. Like, we got the Bears, the Ravens, the Browns, the Vikings, and the Lions. You look at each one of those secondaries and look at them in terms of DVOA versus deep passing. And I'm giving the dramatic pause here because I want to set this up. The Bears are 29th. The Ravens are 20th. The Browns are 26th. The Vikings, we've seen them get beat deep on multiple different weeks. They're 17th. And the Lions are 31st. So if you're not going to sit here and look at Valdes-Scantling's end of the season schedule and absolutely just goo-goo eye over it, then you're looking at the wrong things. Like, this guy has massive equity in this offense as far as, like, the upside plays, the ceiling plays. He's getting a large enough target share where he's getting opportunities to hit on these big plays on a weekly basis now. He's the other prime full-time wide receiver opposite Davante Adams. Aaron Rodgers is still playing fine with his broken toe and all. I love Scantling for the rest of the season. Like, I think that he is the guy that if I'm looking at all of these waiver pickups and outside of the running backs and those top 10, top 20 guys, but if I'm staring at all of these other wide receivers that we have on this list, players that we're going to talk about, I would rather have Marquez Valdes-Scantling than, and I'm going to mention the other guys we're going to get to here in a little bit, because I have Kendrick Bourne's name here. I would rather have MVS, handedly. Mm-hmm. I have Russell Gage on this list. I would take Marquez Valdes-Scantling immensely over Gage, as well as Van Jefferson. Although I think it's an interesting conversation, I would rather have Valdes-Scantling over Van Jefferson. What are your thoughts on all those guys?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Gage, and I definitely agree with Bourne. I have Van Jefferson on this list, so, but it's close. Look, the last 2 weeks, Marquez Valdes-Scantling has more targets than Davante Adams. So, like, obviously, we're not expecting that to continue, but he's got 19 targets the last two games, 10 against Minnesota where he popped off. Again, we talked about the matchup against Minnesota is good for the deep ball. What did MVS do in that game? 75-yard touchdown. 9 targets last game. So 10 and 9 targets the last two games. Those matchups that you mentioned, you look at it, Detroit, second highest average depth of target allowed at 9.5. Baltimore, 8.7, the fourth highest. Minnesota, 8.5, that's the sixth highest. Like, really good matchups for MVS. It's not like he's just getting 4 targets a game, and if he doesn't get the deep one, he's been terrible. I will say Alan Lazard's been out the last 2 games, so if he's back, maybe it eats into it, but Randall Cobb got hurt on Sunday.
Yeah, that was my counterpunch to that. I was going to say, Randall Cobb just got hurt last game, so I think Valdes-Scantling, we're going to see him on the field. Like, he is the starter. I think that you see Lazard and Cobb, even if they are back or they're playing, they kind of eat into each other's roles in this offense, and Valdes-Scantling is a standalone, man. So, I love him rest of the season. Like, I think that he's a guy that we should view as a high-end wide receiver 3, and if he gets the spike weeks, you're probably going to see him over this last part of this schedule. Like, and when we look back on this, Adam, I think Valdes-Scantling could end up as a wide receiver 2 over the back half of the season down the stretch. I mean, is that crazy?
I'd be a little surprised, but I wouldn't be like stunned, because, like, yes, is MVS going to get, I don't think he'll see more than the targets he's seen the last 2 weeks. Like, he's not going to, I'd be surprised if he saw another 9 or 10 target game personally, but he's got a path to see 7, 6, 7, 8. Maybe he does just get 9 if Cobb and Lazard are out and they have no tight end to speak of. And it's like, okay, you can make the case that he's, you know, he's getting deep targets and he's not consistent, he's boom or bust, but like, I'd rather have a boom or bust receiver in Green Bay's offense with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback than a boom or bust receiver almost anywhere else in the NFL. So yeah, the schedule is great. The role is pretty favorable. He's averaging, not too surprising, but he's averaging a ton of yards before the catch per reception. Is ADOT's high, but he's getting more intermediate targets lately too. So I like him, and it's close. We can just tie this in with Van Jefferson. It's very close for me. Van Jefferson can make the case. He's still the number 2 in LA right now. Yes, I know.
Can you really make that case over Odell after last week?
Why not? I know Odell's snaps came back up. Like, they both, so Odell and Van Jefferson both played the same amount of snaps, and Van Jefferson ran one more route, and they both had 9 targets. So, sure, you can say Odell's the 2, but it's not like, I don't think it's a situation, like, we know Cooper Kupp's the clear 1. We know that. Mm-hmm. You could say Odell's the 2, but I wouldn't say it's Odell's the 2 and Van's the clear 3. I would say it's, they're both the 2, or it's very close. And Van Jefferson, I don't get why he's under 50% rostered on Yahoo right now, regardless of the role he's had. And it was low in the beginning of the season because DeSean Jackson was getting playing time and stuff like that. But the last couple weeks, he's had at least 7 targets in 4 out of his last 5 games. And in the one game he didn't have 7 targets, he still had 6. He's getting a ton of downfield targets in an offense that's throwing the ball downfield. He's averaging 12 yards before the catch per reception. That's the 8th highest mark in football. His matchups down the stretch aren't as good as MVS is, but we talked about him a lot in this podcast. I'm a very firm believer in the talent. He's getting end zone targets. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Van Jefferson outperformed Odell the rest of the season. I really wouldn't.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised with that either. I guess I lean to the schedule with MVS over Van Jefferson.
Yeah.
And as well as we're talking about, and we're at least having a conversation about who the 2 is in LA, there's no conversation for me for Green Bay. Like, Marquez Valdes-Scantling is the number 2 wide receiver. But on Van Jefferson, I like him. I think there's still upside to be had. And for all the Stafford hate that's out there right now and the comparisons about, you know, oh, is he just new Jared Goff? I mean, come on, man. I think we're a little bit out over our damn skis. You didn't hear any of that shit to begin the season, and an offense hits a speed bump, and defenses finally say, okay, we're going to take away Cooper Kupp, and you got to sit here and adjust and stuff like that.
I mean, Stafford's turned the ball over because he's aggressive. Like, Jared Goff didn't turn the ball over, but it, like I'd rather have Stafford. Again, the turnovers need to slow down, and he's thrown a couple, you know, interceptions that have gone back for touchdowns, but it's like, I'd rather have that quarterback who's aggressive and taking shots than the 4.5 average at the target, whatever, Jared Goff. It's stupid. Like, I understand that the Rams have won, what, they've lost four in a row or something like that, but like, it's been, their defense has been bad too. Like, we talk about this, their deep passing defense has been terrible. Outside of Jalen Ramsey, like, I think they really missed John Johnson in the back end of their defense, and Von Miller and Aaron Donald haven't really been getting a lot of pressure lately, so it's like, it's not just Matt Stafford.
No, it's not. And I mean, I just think that it's just the pendulum coming back the other way, and people were all in on Stafford and talk about the Rams and stuff like that. And a part of that's just social media. People just love to troll and hate on stuff. So I'm not going too far the other way with this offense or this team. I think they're going to right the ship. I think they're still going to be a playoff team. The defense is more of a concern than the offense. I think that really a lot of this, the Rams need to learn and find a counterpunch. Like, basically the NFL has said, okay, we're going to try to take away Cooper Kupp, and we're going to punch you in the mouth, and can you get back up and find another different way to fight and create big plays and have this offense get back to what it was doing to begin the season? And so until the Rams kind of figure that out, it's going to be some struggles, man. It's going to be interesting to see.
And they hit on big plays on Sunday. MVS, Van Jefferson had the long 75-yard touchdown. Odell had a 54-yard touchdown. But the interception and the fumble didn't help, and their defense, you know, they couldn't get off the field for the majority of that first half. And I think the Packers started the third quarter with a long, long drive on the opening possession. So, like, the big plays have been there. And we did start to see...
Well, and the whole thing with the defense, man, the whole thing with the defense is ridiculous. Like, yes, they're not getting pressure, but an easy thing for this, their corners on the outside are not good. So this whole stuff and, like, getting cute with Jalen Ramsey being a slot corner, that shit needs to be buried, and they need to put that in a coffin. Like, you need to put Ramsey on the damn perimeter, stick one of these other corners in the damn slot, let Ramsey take away an option off the passing game or who you're facing, and make teams account for that. Because right now, Ramsey being a slot corner, or you not utilize him to shadow and take away a pivotal piece for an opposing offense, is absolutely asinine.
I think they started to do it a little bit more on Sunday, but the Packers used a bunch of pre-snap motion to get Adams away from him, so it really didn't matter. And then we started to see the Rams, and McVay talked about it prior to the game. They wanted to get the running game going, and Henderson got a lot of work to start the game. Then they fell behind. By the way, I'll just add real quick, Henderson's dealing with a quad injury. Sony Michel's in that same kind of range of like Jamal Williams. Henderson's, you know, rostered in every league. Michel should be rostered in almost every league too. He's going to get 20 touches a game if Henderson sits out. But yeah, this goes to say, like, I agree the Rams will be, they'll be fine, but they just, you know, they just need to, I think they need to use Odell a lot more like he was during his prime with the Giants, because like quick slants with Odell Beckham, he was the best in the league. If you get that on top of having to worry about Cooper Kupp and then Van Jefferson over the top, like, I think that could really open up their offense.
Yeah, agreed. I think that there's going to be at least a learning curve or a transition to try to sit and replace some of what Robert Woods did. And you're not going to be able to replace all the different things and mishmash his skill set perfectly. But I think if you're going to look to a player for the sweeps, for the end of the rounds, that is something that is in Odell's bag. I think that he can do, as well as, like, Van Jefferson's got speed, dude. Like, use him on the end of rounds, use him for the rushing attempts and stuff like that. Use Odell in the short and intermediate areas. I'm not going to say that he's the Odell of old, but I don't think he's firmly, like, fully cooked or steam-baked yet. I think that he could still be effective. Some other effective wide receivers that you need to be looking at on waivers. I mentioned two of them already, Kendrick Bourne and Russell Gage. Again, these are not high-priority pickups, but these are guys that are getting targets. They are having spike weeks. I would lean Russell Gage over Bourne if you're looking at some type of order for these guys. But Gage, over the last few weeks, since week 9, 6.5 targets a game, 43 receiving yards a game. He's got 7 or more targets in 3 of his last 4 games. And he has a 24% target share. The ceiling is not high for Russell Gage, so really this is a lot more of PPR leagues versus, like, your half PPR, because Russell Gage is not a touchdown scorer. He doesn't have much of a red zone role, much of any, in the Atlanta offense. I know this, that he just scored a touchdown, and I'm saying all this to you right now after last week. But literally, if you go back and look at the box scores, the usage for Russell Gage, the touchdown percentage and the inequity in this offense is not going to be high. But as a guy that could get you good flex numbers, and if he happens to fall into 8 to 10 targets on a weekly basis in PPR, you're looking at a wide receiver 3. Maybe if he gets in the in the end zone that week, that he falls into high-end wide receiver 3, low-end 2 territory. So a guy that it might not be sexy, but the volume is there, as well as Kendrick Bourne, who really, if we're looking at somebody who's really splitting the needle as far as like making the very most out of the volume that he's been given, and I'm not going to say it's a trap, and I would not be overspending for the production, but 17% target share last three games. The matchups are not great. He's only had about 50% of the snaps of the last three games, although that has trended up. They get Buffalo, Indy, Buffalo, then Jacksonville, Miami to close the season. A lot of those matchups are not pristine, but Indy is a secondary we have been attacking all season long. So is Jacksonville and Miami. So I like those as far as matchups, or at least you're looking for a guy that if you're, whether it's injuries down the stretch, that if you're looking like, I got to sit here and put somebody in, I think Bourne is a guy that you could look to for flex worthy or wide receiver 3 option. I'm not going to say that it's great, but these are usable players in fantasy. And some of this we're looking at this point in the season. It's target volume. And do you have at least, can I squint my eyes and tell myself a story of where you could walk away with a ceiling week? These are some guys that I think it's worth it. Before we kind of get move over to a few tight ends, I know there's two players that are left on your list, and one of them I've been wanting to talk about, and thank the Lord, the Saints are finally making this damn move, Adam. Oh, it's Taysom time, baby.
Yeah, and on Kendrick Bourne real quick, I actually really like the call. I talked about him in the solo pod. He's got at least anywhere between 4 and 6 targets like each of his last 5 games. And he showed the huge play potential he has. He's currently, I think, 6th in the NFL in yards after the catch per reception at 7. And like you mentioned, what is it? Indy, Buffalo twice, but Buffalo will not have Tre'Davious White the rest of the season.
Man, I saw that, and I didn't even have the heart.
Ruined it.
I didn't even have the heart to put out a tweet of somebody check on Adam. Like, I didn't even DM you about it because I was like, oh, jeez, man, I know Pfeiffer's hurting about this one.
It's like it's already bad enough that he's legitimately one of my 5 favorite players in the NFL on my favorite team. Yep. But then it's like you see the injury happening, you say, okay, that's, you know, hopefully he's okay, hopefully it's just a cramp. But then you see him on the sidelines with starting to cry, and it's like, then it just hits, and it's like, this is the absolute worst. He'll be back though; he's the GOAT. But that secondary, we've talked like. After Trey White, there's been question marks. Teams have been throwing at Levi Wallace all year because they're not throwing at Trey White. I think Taron Johnson's one of the more underrated slot corners in the league, but I mean, this is the concern I had with Buffalo in the draft and in the free agency. It's like they needed to address corner. I think Levi has been better than people think, but it's just like they don't have anybody that you really worry about outside of the safeties. So I think the matchup is enhanced for Kendrick Bourne, and the other matchups are good too. But Trey White, love you.
Dane Jackson will take the starting spot, right?
They'll have Dane Jackson opposite Levi, and Taron Johnson probably plays in the slot. Yeah. Now, Bills fans have been waiting to see a lot more from Dane Jackson for a year and a half now, so this will be very interesting. No matter how good he is, though, he's not Tre'Davious White, who's one of the 3 best corners in all football. So it's gonna be a hit for Buffalo's defense. On Taysom Hill, yes, he practiced in full. Reports are that he's going to take over at starting quarterback for the Saints. Don't know what they're waiting for.
It's about damn time. Yeah. I just want to say that real fast.
Yeah,
good
I mean,
Lord.
And granted, their offense struggling. They've been without Alvin Kamara, who's their best player for the last couple weeks. Doesn't help. But Simeon just, you know, he's like Jared Goff, but worse. Like, he's just not throwing the ball downfield. Everything's a check down. And when you don't have Alvin Kamara, when you don't have elite playmakers after the catch, you're not going to do much. Now, we had Taysom Hill on the waiver episode, I think it was back like prior to week nine, mm-hmm. when Jameis went down for the season. So I'm just going to repeat everything I said because it all stands, right? The stretch last year where Taysom Hill was the starting quarterback for the Saints, it was a four-game stretch, averaged just over 52 rushing yards per game, 21.5 fantasy points per game. I just, that's all you need to know. And yes, you don't have Michael Thomas, who was peppering with a 30% target share during that stretch. But getting Alvin Kamara back alone, and it looks like Kamara and Mark Ingram will be back on Thursday night. That's all it's going to take for Taysom Hill to flirt with QB1 production. And the matchups, I mean, Dallas this week, Dallas's defense I've always thought was overrated. They were getting turnovers, but like, they're not. Anthony Brown had 4 penalties. Anthony Brown can't cover. Trayvon Diggs is good, but like, he's not a shutdown corner. Like, their defense, and they're still missing DeMarcus Lawrence and the D. Like, they're not a good defense, in my opinion. They're an average defense that really propped themselves up by getting turnovers. And the turnovers have come back down. And that's a good matchup. I think he has Miami. I don't have it in front of me, but his rest season schedule is pretty favorable, too. So, yeah, Taysom Hill. Like, Russell Wilson, if I have Russell Wilson on my team, I'm adding Taysom Hill right now.
I don't disagree with all of that, man. And I put it out there in the space, and I'm like, look, Shane Waldron is a fake sharp. So there's a lot of struggles there, man. And I like the call, and I'm sitting here chuckling because a player that we mentioned previously, and if people didn't already pick him up, you talked about this religiously in the offseason. We talked about it last year. What did Taysom Hill do in his first reads? What did he do, Adam?
Michael Thomas, and if Michael Thomas wasn't open, he took off.
So who do you think is going to be the first read that he locks on?
It better be Alvin Kamara.
Okay, so I'm going to give you some pushback on that. I think, dude, I've already talked about this, man.
Traquan.
It's Traquan. I think it's Traquan, and I'm going to mention him here again because I don't even have to check roster percentages. I can tell you Traquan is out there everywhere. Mm-hmm. And if we see that Taysom Hill is going to sit here and lock on to similar role, he's playing the slot. We've seen his snaps and his targets and everything have been trending up. Marquez Callaway is not that guy. I think that Taysom Hill getting under center is also another bump, and people are not going to look at it that way. But I think it's another bump in the back pocket for Traquan Smith. And you talked about the matchups. Cowboys have been living and dying off of turnovers, okay? Anthony Brown is still not a good corner. He has been playing above his head all season long. Dude, he had four.
I know that game was like one of the most penalized games we've seen in a long time, but Anthony Brown had 4 defensive penalties by himself. Like, that was rough. That was so rough.
Yep. So, I mean, you're looking at these rest of the season schedule for Taysom. Yeah, they get the Cowboys. Then they get the Jets, which we know their secondary is doo-doo butter.
They also can't stop the run.
Nope, exactly. So, pick your narrative. Pick your avenue here. Then they get the Buccaneers, who are playing better defense. Maybe they get Carlton Davis back and stuff like that. That's not going to matter much to Traquan on the inside. Against our boy, Sean Murphy Bunting, who probably goes back to the slot, although he's been playing outside since he returned. Then they get the Dolphins, who you can absolutely get all over Nick Needham or Justin Coleman in the slot. Doesn't matter who they roll out. They're both trash cans. Then the Carolina Panthers, AJ Boye, is basically you throw it that direction, it gets caught. And the Falcons to close the season. So we could see a lot of Taysom Hill and Traquan sweet magic down the season ending stretch. And I know that like maybe sounds like I'm being hyperbolic, but dude, we've seen Taysom Hill garner top 5, top 3 weeks in fantasy. He's been a top 10 quarterback when he was under center. And no, this isn't me just like sticking to, okay, I love Taysom Hill. I thought he should have been the starter from the very beginning. This is, we're looking at the rest of the season schedule and the matchups do present themselves. Either the Saints are going to be pushed to score and the slot matchups are there, man. So if you can go pick up Taysom Hill and Traquan down the end of the stretch, I still like both of them for their end of the season schedules. And before we kick this to 2 different tight ends that I want to bring up to close this out, Adam, damn it, we talked about Matt Breida last week. About him last week, although I will give you, I for full transparency, I pulled up the show notes, and I was going to put Matt Breida's name on this list, I'm going to be honest. I was going to put his name on the list, and then I paused, and I said, oh, crap, I can't type his name in here. I just gave Adam shit about talking about him last week. All right, well, I guess we're not going to talk about it, and then I wake up this morning, and I'm like, he did it. He snuck his name in. Okay, well, good. But just to own it, yes, I mean, talk about Matt Breida here for a second, because I put it this way. I was surprised that Zach Moss was a healthy scratch last week.
I literally told him. So my brother's a Bills fan as well, and it was about.
Oh, shocking! Shocking.
Mm-hmm. It was about 2 o'clock. Dude, we're from upstate New York. Give us a break. It was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm like, dude, I think Zach Moss is going to sit. I think they're just going to go. The breed has been getting more run each week, and they're not going to have all three running backs dress. And that was the case. And Breida actually started the game, whatever that means, quote unquote, he got the first, touches and started the game. Then there was a stretch where I think there was a blown up play where I think Breida missed an assignment or something and he was off the field for a little bit. And it ended up being 32% of the snaps for Breida. Singletary played 68% of the snaps, but Breida got touches when he was on the field. And they even tried to run with him on outside runs and stuff like that against arguably the best run defense in the NFL in the New Orleans Saints. It's pretty obvious. Breida is their most explosive running back. And as much as I've been in the narrative during the offseason where the Bills need to run the ball more, I didn't believe that. I believe they need to run the ball better, but that's still the case. And I think Breida gives them their best chance of having explosive plays in the running game. And I'm not afraid of New England's run defense. They just gave up 100 yards to both Deontay Foreman and Dontrell Hilliard last week.
Yep.
So, like, Breida probably gets, like, 10 touches, maybe 12 touches, a couple catches per game, and one of the best offenses in the NFL. Like, last week I was like, maybe add him and see what happens. Now I think he's a legitimate player that, he's not a must-add, but I think it's somebody, it went from, like, he has my attention to now he's really someone we need to be looking at in fantasy.
I don't disagree with you, man, and I know I'm giving you a bunch of shit about it, but, like, I think if we're going to see this backfield go to like where it was a three-headed monster to a two-way split, and Matt Breida is going to get more of the work because the Bills are saying, look, we need something out of this ground game. And obviously at this point of the season, Moss and Singletary, they ain't it. They're not giving it. I think that this is a team that's searching for answers, and Matt Breida is stepping up and saying, look, man, like, yeah, give me the rock. Like, I can do some things. So you look at the rest of the season schedule and stuff like that. I'm not going to say it's amazing, and I'm not going to say you're going to feel great about having Matt Breida. But he's a guy that I think you need to look at stashing and stuff. And if he gets some of the run in this offense, we know that they're going to put up points. Yeah, I mean, I think that he's worth having on your rosters.
And this offense is they need more speed. Like, Stephon Diggs, one of the best receivers in football. Just absolute, you saw what he did to Lattimore. Like, absolute technician, just as good as it gets. Not exactly somebody that's going to, he's not a 4.3, 4.4 guy. Cole Beasley's not a fast guy. Sanders is not fast at this point of his career. Like, McKenzie and Breida are their speed guys, and we know Singletary and Zach Moss are probably two of the slower running backs in the NFL. So, like, Breida gives them a little bit of a different dimension on offense, and I don't think he's going to be, a healthy scratch the rest of the season.
Yeah, I don't disagree, man. So I think that he's worth at least looking to pick up. It could be more of a deeper league guy, but I still think he's viable. Two tight ends I want to get up in here, and I've talked about Cole Kmet ad nauseum. I'm going to mention him again because he's still out there, people. As a player that, look, you look over the last few weeks. So week 7 to now, he is 5th amongst all tight ends in targets with 33. He's 8th amongst all tight ends in receiving yards. And I don't think that people really understand the type of usage that he's been getting, Adam. As well as a guy that I think that he's going to be a staple of this offense. I don't know if we see a healthy version of Allen Robinson for the rest of the season, dealing with the hamstring issue. And, I mean, come on, dude. Like, Cole Kmet, the only thing we're missing is the touchdowns, man. 51% out of the slot. And you look over the last few weeks, like his last three games, his yards per route run have come up. He's at 1.8. And, he's 9th amongst all tight ends, and there's 35 tight ends with 10 or more targets in that metric. And a guy that, since week 9, he's tight end 15. And if the touchdowns were there, he'd be a top 10 guy. So I think that he's going to remain involved in this offense. We've seen his usage trend up. We just need the damn touchdowns to follow, and the guy is going to put up really good points down the stretch. As well as, I talked about him in the Dynasty article this week that's up live over at FTN Fantasy, and we saw him score last night, Adam. Gerald Everett, I think, is going to flirt with top 10, top 12 production for the rest of the season. He has distanced himself from Will Disley. He's running routes on over 70% of dropbacks of the last 3 weeks. I have not looked at last night's stats and to recalculate that.
I saw Disley on special teams more than on offense last night, so...
Disley's snaps have gone down on offense, man. Like, walking into last night's game, Everett was running the two previous weeks, he had seen an 18% target share and ran routes on 78% of dropbacks. Now you see over the last few weeks, and this is updated to account for last night's game, he's the tight end 11 since week 9. You look at an offense that's floundering, that's struggling, I think that we're going to see Gerald Everett continue to get run down the stretch. And I think that he's going to flirt with top 10, top 12 production if the touchdowns are going to be there. Gerald Everett's a guy that you need to be looking at if you're hurting at the tight end position to be getting on your roster down the stretch run. But those are all the waiver wire pickups for this week, people. Adam and I are going to be back to discuss dynasty, trade targets, and moves you need to be making before week 13 for your dynasty rosters. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.